Support for Connecticut East this week comes from Reality Interactive, helping your business create seamless and memorable digital experiences for your customers. Find out more at realityi.com. Connecticut Council on Problem Gambling, here to help individuals and families affected by gambling-related harm. Call 1-888-789-7777 or visit our website at ccpg.org. Thames at Mitchell College, a holistic on-campus program that helps high school graduates prepare for college through personal transformation. Go to mitchell.edu/Thames to learn more. And Day Kimball Health, nationally recognized by Leapfrog, Becker's, and the American Heart Association. Day Kimball Health, healthcare in motion. Learn more at daykimball.org. It's possibly the biggest financial decision you'll make in your life, to own a home and get a mortgage. We talk with Jonathan Tremblay, an independent mortgage specialist, about why you should shop around. Plus, we take a look at other stories making the headlines from around the region. This is Connecticut East This Week. Hello, I'm Brian Scott Smith. To own your own home is part of the American dream, but for many, it's a scary thought. Renting is commonplace here in Connecticut, and although it allows flexibility to move around, renting is becoming more and more expensive, and sometimes coming with fewer additional extras like your services being part of your monthly payment. In fact, around one-third of homes in the state are rented as against owned, and that varies from town to town and city to city. So what's holding people back from getting a mortgage and owning their own home? In many cases, it's outdated views and knowledge about what it takes to get a mortgage. So we're talking to Jonathan Tremblay of Polaris Mortgage Group LLC. We're going to be talking about all things mortgage, and really 20 minutes is just barely scratching the surface, but we want to give the listeners a bit of an idea because mortgages are important. There's a lot that goes into them. Let's just open up with this question. You know, why can go to a bank, or most of us can go to banks and they will offer mortgages. What's the advantage of coming to somebody like you, who clearly more independent, the advantages of coming to a mortgage service like yours?
That's a great question. I would say the advantage to going to a mortgage broker is quite simply, we're mortgage professionals. It's all we do is mortgages. So that's our expertise. And we like to say we're faster, cheaper, and easier. That has a lot to do with, given that the way our model works is we're technically wholesalers. So we're working with lenders who are actually lending the money. But because we're a wholesaler, we can work with a variety of lenders that can offer different competitive products and different competitive rates. And because it's all we do, all we know is mortgages. We're not doing car loans. We're not doing personal loans or credit cards or anything like that. We're really specialists in the mortgage field.
Yeah, because I mean, I think that's the important thing, isn't it? Because like I said, you know, we can all walk into our banks or credit unions and they offer a variety of services, and we're certainly not knocking them. They do a very good job in what they do. But mortgages, it's a specialist thing. And I mean, it's something you're potentially going to have for 25, 30 years. So you need to know that you're getting, one, the right advice and also the right product as well, because there's a lot of products out there, aren't there?
Correct. I like to say nothing's worse than getting a great rate on the wrong product. So if it's not the right fit, doesn't matter what deal you think you're getting. If you're not in the right product, then it's not the right product. And a lot of that could be, we had a young borrower looking to put a 20% down payment, which is fantastic. They've been very disciplined. They've saved. But when I told them 20% is going to take up all your hard-earned savings, and it's not going to really leave you with any emergency fund or maybe put you in the best position if something were to happen, an unplanned expense, then you're having to acquire debt at a high interest rate via credit card or borrow money or worse, not pay something. So, you know, structuring it, hey, there's an option. Maybe you put 10 or 15% down. And with the lowest mortgage insurance rates in the entire country, on that particular scenario, around $250,000 loan amount, because they had really good credit scores, at 15% down, their private mortgage insurance, or PMI, which is the dreaded word in mortgages, was $18 a month. So it wasn't that scary. And they could put down 5% less, which they could keep in their account, which might come in handy if they have an unexpected expense or they want to do some repairs or they're they're young, they'll want to buy furniture or do things like that. They'll be able to do that with their cash assets. So I think it's the structure, it's knowing the business and thinking through more than one dimension. Oh, it's a mortgage and this is the only way. Sometimes there's more than one way, and sometimes people haven't thought that through. And because they haven't thought it through, they're leaving options off the table that would actually be a better fit for them financially, short and long term.
I was going to say, what are some of the common misconceptions? Because you must come up against this, obviously, on a daily basis, people have about mortgages.
I think probably the first misconception about mortgages from a buying standpoint is people still think you need 20% down to buy a house. And that's just simply not true. I mean, there's conventional products out there. Right now, there's a special through the end of the month, a 1% down conventional loan. Not everybody qualifies for that. There's income restrictions, but there's definitely, you can do a 3% down conventional loan product, can do FHA mortgage, which is a 3.5% down loan product. If you're a veteran, for example, which we have a lot of veterans throughout Connecticut and Massachusetts where I'm licensed, there's a lot of veterans out there. That's a no money down product. And even the USDA loan offers a zero down product. So I think that's the biggest misconception is I need 20% or I can't buy a house from people.
I read recently that, I can't talk obviously for Massachusetts, but certainly in Connecticut, they were sort of suggesting, the realty companies were saying that there's more houses becoming available now as against, you know, like about a year ago. So there's a lot more for people to choose from. Are you starting to see that yourself in people coming to you? You know, are you getting a few more inquiries than maybe this time last year about mortgages? And are people seriously now thinking about mortgages as against renting? Because rent has just gone absolutely sky high. In some instances, rent can be as much as a mortgage payment and you're not getting anything for it.
Correct. I think we are seeing more activity where people are coming onto the market. You know, there's a few things at play. You have what's called the locked-in effect, where people didn't want to give up their 2-3% mortgage rate for a 6-8% mortgage rate over the last 18 to 24 months. So they've decided not to do anything. But life happens. And I think people are realizing, I can't put my life on hold forever if I really need a bigger house, or I really want to downsize, or I really want to move. So whether the rate's 6.6% or 6.9% or 7.25%, people that don't want to put their life on hold anymore, I think are coming to market. The other thing in terms of home buyers, I think buyers are realizing, I just talked to a friend of mine the other day. He was looking for an apartment. He's not quite in a position to buy, so he does need to rent. I asked him, how much are rents? He said anywhere from $1,400 to $2,100 for a two-bedroom apartment. I said, well, what does that include? And he said, in most cases, nothing, one included hot water. So I think you make a valid point. Even though home affordability is kind of a buzzword and higher interest rates, higher home prices is definitely impacting some people's ability to have affordable housing, there are still some opportunities. And as more houses come on the market, I think that opportunity is broader for people. And the ability to gain wealth through home ownership is, I think, underestimated, especially with maybe people from families that haven't owned homes, or that's just not part of their kind of DNA, where it's like, well, I can't own a home because I need 20%. All these misconceptions, you know, I can think back over 24 years and I think about people that maybe didn't have great credit. And I said, I'm not a credit repair company, but I understand how credit reporting works and some things that you can do to improve your score. And, you know, people go through these steps and then they buy a house. And now 20 years later, that is most definitely their biggest asset that they have. I mean, they may have, with the way homes have appreciated, they might have a couple $100,000 in equity in their home. And then I see them and they say, hey, I'm going to pay my house off in 8 years. You know, it's a great feeling. You can really generate wealth and really establish yourself. And not only that, it's just the pride of you have a house and raising families, kids, dogs, being able to do what you want. Some things that apartments can't afford to people. So, I mean, it's really, I look at the business as, I'm in a business to help people, and you help people acquire kind of the American dream. The American dream is home ownership. People think about, what do I want? You know, I think owning a home is definitely right at the top of a lot of people's list, and that's what we help people do.
I was going to say, because I mean, by and far, it's probably the biggest financial decision that people will make in their lives, bar maybe starting a business. So, and it's something, like we said, that is going to be with them for many years. Are you starting to see, you alluded to 24 years, which I'm assuming is sort of like how long you've been sort of doing this, all of that experience is beyond a value, really, isn't it, sort of thing? But I mean, that, again, that goes back to what we were saying at the top of the interview as to why coming to somebody like yourself is beneficial, because that's exactly what you do day in, day out. Are you starting to see, as I say, a bit of a mind shift? I know economics obviously always plays into these things, clearly, but are you starting to see a bit of a mind shift with people, maybe younger people now saying, yeah, I don't want to rent anymore, I do actually want to own, because renting has been the norm for years?
I think with the younger people, it's really, they may have the hardest kind of bridge to gap to get into home ownership right now. There's obviously, everybody talks about interest rates, but a lot of the younger people don't really have any perspective on interest rates. They don't understand that in the early 80s, interest rates were in the upper teens. So relatively speaking, I know we all got spoiled with ultra low interest rates, and I certainly would love rates to go back to 2-3%, but I'm not sure that we'll see that anytime soon. So there's a little bit higher interest rates in perspective of, you know, what people can recall or remember. There's also inventory is an issue. If you were to talk to real estate agents, if a really nice house comes on the market, there could be 20-30 people coming through that house to potentially buy it. So that puts a strain on the availability of what's out there. And I think that that's also probably created a little bit of prices being driven up, despite interest rates kind of being a little sticky in and around 7% or higher, we saw back in October. But I think people that have experienced the renting market and they realize that renting isn't such a great deal, and maybe they're paying a high rent, for them to look at, well, what would the real cost of home ownership be, is something that makes a lot of sense. And it doesn't necessarily make sense to wait, you know, for rates to go down, because there's this kind of double-edged sword where we're in an economy that doesn't act a lot like maybe economies of the past, where people say, well, if interest rates go down, home prices will go down. I'm not sure that's the case. I think if interest rates go down, people may feel like they can spend more because they're looking more at that monthly payment. So a house today at 7% might be worth more in a year. So by waiting for rates to go down 1%, you might not really be gaining. So the real thing is you need to live your life. People, if they want to own a home, it's like people might have waited for 2 years for rates to come down. It hasn't really happened. I mean, we have the few blips where rates maybe touched around low sixes over the last 24 months, but that's about it. I mean, rates have been kind of pretty sticky around 7%. I mean, and that's just kind of what it is. And if you are ready to own a home, I say, you know, jump in. Let somebody run the numbers for you. Really get comfortable with what your budget is, what your debt to income is. That's one of the things we explain to people, where it's a pretty simple concept, but I mean, sometimes you just need it kind of laid out, and come up with a plan. You know, even if that initial call just puts you on a track to come up with a plan 6 to 12 months out, that's perfectly fine too. Get started. There's no pressure. Figure out what the track is, what needs to happen, and go for it.
So when people approach you, just give us this like a quick idea. What are the types of things that people should be getting ready, they should have available by way of documentation information? I'm sure it's quite an exhaustive list, but there's probably, I'm sure, a top 5 or 6 must-haves that people need to make sure that they've got if they come to you or somebody else for a mortgage.
It's pretty simple. I mean, nowadays, I've been doing this for 24 years, so you know, I'm still a little old school, where I like to get my hands on people's W-2s for the last 2 years and a pay stub. But if you work for a large corporation, there's technology where they can actually do all that automation. You know, you put in your credentials through your payroll department, whether it be ADP or somebody else, and they just pull the data for you. But I'd say the short list is, I need to know your 2-year work history and 2-year resident history. That's it. I don't need to know what you did 25 years ago or 8 years ago or even 4 years ago, unless it's the same job that you're at now. 2-year work in resident history. And then I need to know your pay. So a pay stub should be able to do that. If you're a contract worker, I need a copy of the contract. And then last 2 years W-2s. And that's pretty much it. Of course, we'll ask for your ID for identification purposes. And then it's really just having a conversation. I like to talk about people's debts. I don't like to say, here's my link, go apply online, which you certainly can do. I would much rather have a conversation with somebody first and pull their credit absolute last, so that we have a good sense of, are we a good fit to work together? Are you even going to qualify? Or do we know that there's some things, roadblocks in the way that we're not going to be able to overcome that we could start working on before diving into what's your date of birth and your social security number? That's actually on my pre-qualification application. Those are the actual two last questions I ask people, which a lot of people, those are the first two questions they ask people, because I think there's a different methodology. Part of it is, are we a good fit to do business together? And part of it is, let me see if you qualify. I know how the numbers are going to lay out. Hopefully I can educate you into how I got to that, so it's not this mystery. But let's go through that pre-qualification, get a good sense of where you are right now.
The important thing to make clear to anybody listening to this, if they're thinking of possibly buying a house for the first time, or even if they're maybe, seeking another property, is making sure that you've got that mortgage pre-qualified, because without that, you're sort of wasting your time, really, especially if it's a house that you've really set your heart on. Mm-hmm. And as we said, the market is still quite hot, so these things are disappearing. So people really do need to understand that pre-qualifying for a mortgage, coming to speak to a professional like you first, getting those figures, making sure what the amount is that you can realistically pay back and that you can get. And as you said, these are all the things that you're going to be able to say to and tell, you know, potential clients. It's the most important thing, because otherwise they're going to set themselves up for disappointment.
Correct. The number one thing, and it's hard to kind of create this shift with buyers, because the first thing most buyers do is they see a house and they call the real estate agent, where really the first thing they should do is get pre-qualified, get pre-approved, and then go look for houses that fit inside that kind of box or bucket that they're actually qualified for. It really puts the power in your hand, where you can go out and kind of dictate the way things are going to go for you moving forward. And we work with some great real estate agents that I think if everybody came and got pre-qualified first, it probably would make their lives a lot easier. And I think if you're talking with somebody and you like to be kind of educated about the process, I think it would make, from a buyer standpoint, that whole search thing a whole lot easier, as opposed to I'm just kind of being driven down this track because I got to call this person, I have to call this person, and you know, there's really no decision making on their part.
Once, of course, you know you've got the mortgage and you've had a mortgage, like we said, you know, you could have it for a number of years. You can refinance them, obviously, if it's advantageous to do so. Like you said, you were talking about the interest rates, etc. How often should you think about possibly reviewing and maybe looking at whether or not a refinancing on your mortgage is something you should be doing?
You know, we do different mailers, try to stay in front of our people. There's, you know, statistics that say 90% of people that use a mortgage broker had a good experience and they would use them again, but only 10% do, because most people don't do a good job on following up, staying in front of people, variety of different reasons. But I would say on an annual basis, we like to at least touch base or try to reach somebody by phone several times throughout the year to do a review. Right now I look at my spreadsheet and I see anywhere from high 1% loans to 3% loans. Those people probably doesn't make sense for them to do a refinance at 7%. A better option might be a home equity line of credit, which we can offer, where if they want to consolidate some high interest credit card debt or maybe do some home renovations, where they can do kind of that second mortgage option. But I would say it's good to know your numbers. And I would say on an annual basis, especially if you've bought a home in the last 2 years, there was a point where interest rates pretty much touched around 8%. So even right now, those people can save. I mean, if you can generally drop a percentage point with low fees, that's going to make sense for you. I mean, that could be a couple $100 a month in savings. So I think there's opportunities even now where people, if you have an interest rate, I would say over 7.5% with the current market, that's worth having a discussion. And I always tell people the best value that you can get while shopping for a mortgage is get the absolute most competitive rate at the lowest cost, because we're in a market right now where a lot of people have been wrong, but a lot of people also say that mortgage rates are going to go down. So at some point they'll be right. And at some point, everybody that has a 7%+ interest rate is going to refinance, probably around 6%. I don't know when that is, if that's in 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, 20, but that will happen. But what's important is when you do refinance, you're getting the most competitive rate at the lowest cost, because rates then go to 5.25%. And you just paid a couple points to get your 6%, and then you refinance out of that loan. All those costs that you've piled into that mortgage, most people aren't coming out of pocket on refinancing. They're rolling everything in, increasing their loan amount. You've basically just prepaid interest that you'll never see that money for. So if you can do a value refinance, lowest possible competitive rate at the lowest cost, that's going to allow you so that when next time rates drop 0.75 or 1 point, you can do the same thing where you are saving. It's really a benefit. I've never been a fan, and there's companies out there, they'll refinance people for $25 a month. I could save you $25 a month. That's never been my thing. Some people think that makes sense. I don't. In my mind, it's like if you can do a low-cost refinance and maybe save $100 to $150 a month, that seems to be a pretty good sweet spot. You can recover some of your closing costs, attorney fees types things within maybe 12 to 24 months. That seems to make sense to me, especially in this market where maybe rates do come down over the next 36 months and there's maybe more than one opportunity to refinance and save money. So
the other thing as well is potentially you could shave a few years off of the actual life of the mortgage as well, couldn't you?
Correct. So that's a great point. One of the products that we like to do is try to create this unshoppable loan. So one of the ways we can do that is we can offer fixed rate mortgages anywhere from 8 to 30 years. So say you took a mortgage 2 years ago and you're at 7.6%. But it was 2 years ago. You don't want to do a 30-year fixed mortgage. You feel like you're going backwards type of thing. We can do a 28-year fixed. We can do a 23-year fixed. Anything between 8 and 30 years, we can do a fixed rate loan on that loan. So that's one way too. And maybe you're saying, hey, well, I'm comfortable with this payment, but I know interest rates have come down a point and a quarter. We'll just do the math and say, well, if you're comfortable paying the payment you're paying now, you have 28 years left in your mortgage. We could put you into a 19-year fixed loan at the same payment. That's going to save you a tremendous amount of savings.
And that's the thing people don't see, isn't it? Because it's the invisible thing to them. Mm-hmm. Is they don't realize that, yeah, you're not going to be paying all of that interest if you actually keep paying that, if you can still afford to pay that rate, bring the amount of years down, how much you're actually going to save on the interest.
Correct.
As well. Thank you ever so much,
Thank you
for talking us through that. And thanks for coming on the podcast as well.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. And last thing, I came up with this thing. I wrote it down on my pad on my desk. Kind of the slogan that came to my mind was, don't be intimidated. It pays to shop around.
If you want to find out more about how to get pre-qualified for a mortgage and how much you can afford to hopefully find that house of your dreams, then give Jonathan a call on 860-928-6600 or visit his company website at PolarisMG, that's PolarisMG.com. Connecticut East this week is made possible by Reality Interactive, helping Fortune 500 businesses connect with their customers through innovative digital tools to help foster strong relationships and deliver data-driven, seamless solutions. We help you create memorable digital experiences to bring your brand to consumers in insightful ways. Find out how we can help your digital transformation today at RealityEye, that's RealityEye.com. Thames at Mitchell College, a college transition program on Mitchell's waterfront campus in New London. Mitchell offers a culture of radical possibilities where students with learning or processing differences can thrive, easing into college with supportive faculty and a strong social network. Within this tight-knit living and learning community, Thames students build executive functioning skills, earn college credit, learn strategies for independence, and experience transformative growth. Learn more at Mitchell.edu. And
it's time for the quiet corner to make some noise. Some Day Kimball Health noise. Largest employer in our region kind of noise. Day Kimball Health serves more than 125,000 people, offers cardiology, orthopedics, and oncology specialties. It's having the region's only comprehensive and accredited breast center kind of noise. We're nationally recognized by LeapFrog, Becker's, and the American Heart Association. Day Kimball Health. Healthcare in motion.
The Connecticut Council on Problem Gambling is a nonprofit organization which, through advocacy, prevention, and education, is here to support individuals and families who are impacted by problem gambling. Our helpline, 1-888-789-7777, is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We also have live chat and tech support through our website, www.ccpg.org.
Time now for a look at other stories making the headlines this week. The future of the Connecticut Port Authority is being debated by the State Appropriations Committee at public hearings after Governor Lamont proposed a bill that would see the agency merge with the state's Airport Authority. Jen Kowecki is the managing director of the Connecticut Maritime Trades Association, who serves the recreational boating community in the state, and said she opposes any merger as it will reduce the expertise of the Port Authority.
The Connecticut Port Authority serves as the main conduit to the state's maritime economy and commerce. The recreational boating sector, with our marinas and water-dependent businesses, is a significant part of that. Subsuming the CPA into the Connecticut Airport Authority could lose that laser focus. The Connecticut Airport Authority's executive director and board of directors would oversee a renamed Connecticut Maritime Authority. We wonder if that really would make sense.
State Senator Kathy Austin, who co-chairs the Appropriations Committee, acknowledged the work of the Port Authority to date, but said it had also failed to undertake many other tasks it's responsible for.
There has not been significant or any real marketing of the small harbors and marinas that are around the state, and that is part of the Port Authority's responsibility. Marine Trades Association was also concerned about the fact that ship grants had not been going out. The small harbor improvement plans programs have not been going out. They're supposed to, by state law, go out every year on a competitive basis.
David Kouros, the current chairman of the Port Authority, said in written testimony to the committee that he was proud of the work of the CPA over the past few years, having worked with the state's Office of Policy and Management to improve the Port Authority, but also saw the benefit of having a larger agency help the CPA with its work and its mission. Many commentators say the merger could be a done deal due to controversy that has circled the Port Authority over the last several years for ethics violations by staff and a board member, as well as the cost of the State Pier project in New London into a hub for the offshore wind industry, which is still to be completed and started out at a cost of $93 million and has since ballooned to almost $311 million. A new report brands Connecticut's tax system as regressive for low to middle income residents and uses a report from the state to make its point. Edwin J. Vieira from the Connecticut News Service has more.
The Connecticut Voices for Children report reviews the state's tax incidence study, where one of the biggest findings is how the property tax contributes to the regressive system. This is because a town's mill rate doesn't adjust based on a tax filer's income, and low to middle income residents spend more on housing as a percentage of their budget than those with higher incomes. Report author Patrick O'Brien says Connecticut could have a more fair tax system by implementing a few policy changes.
One, eliminate and or close the state's tax gap, which we've shown likely primarily benefits high income and wealthy tax filers. Two, eliminate and or reduce regressive tax expenditures. And three, possibly increase personal income tax rates on high income and wealthy tax filers.
He adds that revenue could then be used to provide tax cuts for lower and middle income households and could help with creating a state level child tax credit. One thing to note is the state's report was based on data from 2020. O'Brien notes the state has made changes to its tax system since then, but the Connecticut Voices for Children report shows despite the new cuts, the tax system is still regressive. I'm Edwin J. Vieira.
Students in New London schools will soon see more Coast Guard cadets, staff and faculty in their classrooms after the school district signed an agreement with the Coast Guard Academy based in the city. It's all part of the Coast Guard's Partnership in Education program, or PIE, to help increase the level of academic excellence among students in communities served by the Coast Guard. Rear Admiral Michael Johnston is the 43rd superintendent of the Coast Guard Academy and said the partnership is more than just an agreement.
It's a promise to our commitment, to our future, to our children, and to the ideals of service, education, leadership, and community. During the COVID years, I think, you know, a lot of the doors closed and bridges to the local community sort of crumbled, but we showed up. This partnership is an embodiment of all of those priorities. It's the bridge between the guardians of our seas and the minds of tomorrow.
The agreement will see Coast Guard personnel in classes ranging from sports to science and even high school robotics teams, as well as various special events throughout the school year. Dr. Cynthia Ritchie is the superintendent for New London Public Schools and said the benefits of the Coast Guard personnel are being seen already.
Members of the Coast Guard who have visited our high school have been instrumental in visiting students in lunch, building partnerships and mentorships, working in our robotics team with the expertise of technical skills, and supporting students within educational realms, sports, athletics, etc. So we are more than thrilled and honored to have this opportunity to really crystallize the work that we know we're going to continue to do together.
The agreement comes at a time when the Coast Guard as a whole is being investigated by a federal investigation subcommittee headed by Connecticut U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal over allegations of historic sexual misconduct within the service that was covered up in a recent report called Operation Fouled Anchor and subsequently unearthed by the news organization CNN. Music. That's all from us for this edition. Do send us your questions and story ideas to the show via our website at connecticut-east.com or Facebook or Twitter at Connecticut East and on Instagram at Connecticut East This Week. And you can listen to the show again on our social platforms, on demand, and by asking your smart speaker to play Connecticut East This Week podcast. And please like, follow, and share on your social media too. I'm Brian Scott Smith. Thank you for listening.